Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Small business owner, you're special among Americans. You are a latter-day pioneer of our society and truly one of America's heroes. Welcome back, heroes. It's 13 After. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And you're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners with the maximum opportunity to succeed. Barry Gibbons is our friend and our guest this hour. He's been with us before, and let me tell you a little bit about him. He is the former chairman and CEO of Burger King Corporation. Now he is an entrepreneur, small business person, just like you and me, as I said earlier. His first book is called The Indecision is Final, or I should say This Indecision is Final, which I have not seen, by the way. I'd like to get a copy of that. And his new book is called If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. Barry is an Englishman, as you will detect from his accent, his wonderful English accent. Barry, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim, good to be here.
It's good to have you with us. Before we get into the book, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you noticed, I don't know if you watch television, if you notice the infomercials, that are on. You know, you're selling mops or they're selling grill.
Yeah, well, I tried Thymaster and it didn't work for me, so something must be wrong.
Thymaster. That's a good one. Yeah, me too. My thighs are still pretty heavy. But have you noticed, though, that more and more of these infomercials, these insidious infomercials, have got people with English accents hawking them?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think it's.
Would you please explain that to me?
I think it's the Hugh Grant syndrome. I have no idea what the world sees in Hugh Grant, but he gets $15 million a picture and seems to pack him out everywhere he goes. I don't know. Maybe we've achieved the status of the sort of niche shop on the market on the high street that's left. You know, when all the other shopping and the big serious stuff has gone out of town to big, enormous, bland hypermarket, supermarket buildings, the little niche shop that's left on the high street.
Yeah.
That might be England's role in the world now. We may have to clone Hugh Grant's to be able to sell things for the rest of the world.
Yeah, in that, what was the movie where he said, forget about it? Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah, Mickey Blue Eyes, yeah.
Mickey Blue, yeah, I saw that a while back. Hey, forget about it. He just couldn't quite pull it off, could he?
He'd probably sell Thymasters.
I just noticed that, and
well, you know, they're saying after we've lost the empire that we're searching for a role in the world. We lost the empire and we're searching for a role.
So,
that might be it.
So England's new role is infomercials.
Infomercials across the planet. Yeah,
that's incredible. Well, I just the first two or three times it happened. Obviously, the English accent is so distinctive, and it's a beautiful accent to listen to. And even, I mean, I love the Cockney accents, the people that I've met and have known with the Cockney accents.
I think the American nation, I live in both places, up for 10 years, don't understand quite how you, in England, which you can actually fit in, the whole of the British Isles, you can fit in Florida and still have a good drive. Within 30 miles of each other, you can have a regional accent in England, which the other two people can't understand. I mean, it's that serious. Between Manchester and Liverpool, between Liverpool and Birmingham, between Manchester and Newcastle, the accents are so different and so strong. It's really like France was a long time ago.
Well, the thing that I think is happening now, though, they've gone overboard, and so after the fourth or five or fifth different product that has someone with an English accent hawking it, I think they sort of lost the impact. But they seem to be still doing it. Well, anyway, I've been dying to ask someone that question, and thank you for helping me with that.
That's our new role in the world.
Can I quote you on that, Barry?
Yes, you can.
Okay. 888-822.
And also you could say, I am available.
for the next Time Master, the next generation of Time Masters, right?
Bums of steel do a job.
888-822-8255. Barry, you've been with us before, and we've talked about your book, If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. I want to talk about Chapter 5 in a second, which is called On Being Big but Acting Small.
Yeah.
But before we do that, I need you to tell our audience one more time how you came up with this title.
The title is really a reflection of I had 28 years in big business, you know, from the Shells to Grand Met to finishing up running Burger King and you know, across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when I chose to quit my own decision and do something different with my life, and when I look back on it, I realized that I'd put about, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 of these wonderful business plans together over that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these neatly typed documents that you, if you're a small businessman, you kind of do it on your PC. If you're a big businessman, you get, you know, one of the big six consultants.
Right. You hire a major accounting firm.
And I realized that not one of them had ever come off over its full time frame. And I thought, well, you know, maybe there's a rule in there which we could use, that once you've done it, you at least know that's the one thing that will not happen. And I put that down as a sort of universal rule, and I thought, well, I wonder if there are any more. And I kept writing then, and I stopped, or my publisher stopped me at 101.
Exactly.
Universal rules.
Which we have here in the front of the book, which we're going to cover a few more of those than we
right.
did last time. But, no, so in other words, what you're saying is maybe these big businesses should spend the money that they want on a business plan and then market, lay it down as a benchmark and then move in the other direction.
I think it's a good process, and I'm not going to decry it, but it really should be treated as taking a Polaroid picture of the business.
Yeah.
And what you have to do then is you've got to go into your business. And you know, management to me is about how the guys on the Mayflower handle life. You know, every morning they got up and they face change and different circumstances and new things like you and I can't imagine. And every day, what their philosophy was, they dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the world threw at them, they dealt with it. And then they went to bed tired, got up next morning and did the same again. I think that's... you can't rely on something you put in a nice Kinko's copied book
right.
a year ago. In the morning, you get up and you deal with it. And you have to have that mentality today.
Well, that's exactly right, and you know that's one of the things that I say about small business owners is that regardless of what happens, they have to get up and you know they turn the lights on every morning, they turn the lights off every evening.
That's right.
And they have to be in their business all the time.
Yeah, and it's no good saying, hang on a minute, I didn't plan this. Or
yeah.
This is not in my book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way to go under.
Exactly. Yeah, I did all the research, and I have a great business plan, and this wasn't part of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Let's talk about. Well, I'll tell you what. Before we do that, we're about to go to a break, but I don't want
right.
to get started on something new. When we come back, one of your chapters is very intriguing to me. Chapter 5 is called On Being Big But Acting Small.
Right.
And I'm going to get you to talk to us about that when we come back after this next break. And then I'm going to ask you to reverse that and help us understand about how to be small but act big. 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Barry Gibbons is our friend and our special guest this hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 24 after. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your business. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Barry Gibbons, former chairman and CEO of Burger King Corporation and the author of If you want to make God really laugh, show him your business plan is our guest and our friend. And we're about to talk about something the chapter 5 in his book, which is called On Being Big But Acting Small. How do you do that, Barry?
Well, first of all, you need to ask why. And my belief is that a lot of winning distinction in the marketplace today, whether it's a product or a service, is moving away from what you do to how you do it. A lot of people can get product in there at a reasonable price, which is compatible or comparable with yours. And what's starting to win is how you deliver, the relationship you've established with your buyer, whether it's a corporate buyer or a consumer buyer. And one of the things I think that's working really well is for a big company, I say big, you know, mid-size,
mm-hmm.
regional size, going right up to the big corporations, mm-hmm. to somehow give the imagery and the impression that they actually care as much as the single shop, the guy with the white coverall. I'll give you an example I've used in the book, which is Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Branson.
Mm-hmm.
Who would argue that Virgin is the only new worldwide brand created by my country, England, for the last 50 years, which annoys us all immensely, because I think he's right.
But it's true, though, right?
if you can find one, send it on a postcard. But I'll give you an example. It took me about a minute. It says my sister-in-law was flying back from Miami to London and arrived at the airport at Miami, and there was a delay announced. And, of course, that annoys everybody. You've got a 9-hour flight, and, you know, everybody's tense and annoyed. And all of a sudden, people are walking around giving out pieces of paper. And we get one on this piece of paper. It's a timed fax. The time is 1 o'clock in the morning in London because it's late, you know, the 5 hour difference. And the letter goes to the customer. This is what's happened with this flight. This is what's happened next. This is what we're going to do to make life as easy as possible. And you should watch this space, and this is, you'll be informed like this. Yours sincerely, Richard Branson. And the effect on my sister-in-law was astonishing. She went from kind of homicidal maniac to lottery winner. And remember, this is on the back of a four-hour delay. And, you know, I'm having a smile here. I don't know whether Branson's listening, because I don't know whether they got Branson out of bed to do
right.
it, or whether it's just a system that was put in. Mm-hmm. But it tells you so much about what is essentially a $4-5 billion corporation.
But it worked.
Somehow you still feel as though you can touch the guy, you know, in the white coverall behind the counter.
Right.
They've managed to run the business, organize, and it's not one man. It's a culture that goes in a business, and then it needs all that boring stuff like systems and processes and policies and procedures to make it happen. But how they run the business is still like a kind of small company, and it's an enormous corporation.
Well,
if you can do that, it's a wonderful trick.
Exactly. Now, the thing you've got to be able to do, and I'm going to tell you an old story here in a minute, but the thing you've got to be able to do is you've got to be able, even though you and I are pretty sure that Richard Branson didn't really get up in the middle of the night and sign that note, but we do believe that he was responsible, or people he hired was responsible for coming up with the plan.
Absolutely.
But the thing is if you're going to do that, you've got to back it up with performance.
Yes.
And as you were telling that story, it reminded me of the old story I heard a long time ago about when they had the Pullman, years ago, you know, 100 years ago, they in the Pullman cars, they had bed bugs. In the railroad Pullman cars, they had bed bugs. And so some lady had written in to the president of this railroad company and was complaining about the bed bugs. And so she got back this letter from the president. How mortified he was that she had bed bugs. I can't believe this happened. This is something we almost never have happen. I apologize. I'm taking care of it immediately. Please accept my humble apologies, et cetera, et cetera. So just like the Richard Branson story, the woman was excited and very pleased, right?
Right.
Except that in the envelope with the letter was also this little handwritten note that had accidentally got stuck in the envelope, and it said, "Send this idiot the bed bug letter."
Yes, I know. Yeah.
So you've got to be able to back it up with performance. You can't just push these guys off.
And it really then becomes it needs to permeate into the culture of the way your people do business, of how
right.
they do business, not just you.
Right.
But right down. But then you go back and the challenge, the counterposition, that how many chairmen of major corporations get that involved?
That's exactly right.
Directly or indirectly.
Stand by. Barry, we're going to take a break. Folks, right. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Barry Gibbons is our special guest. He's the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. It's available in bookstores. It's available online. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk about being small but acting big. Stay with us. We're back. It's 33 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Barry Gibbons is our special guest and our good friend. He's the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan, The 101 Universal Laws of Business. We're going to, before we finish up the hour, we will talk about some more of those laws, Barry. But before we do, I want you to tell us where your book is available.
The classic answer to that is all quality bookstores.
Mm-hmm. And maybe a couple of bookstores that aren't so quality, right?
Yeah.
And online.
That's my judgment, yeah. It's online at the Amazons and these guys. Yeah, but it's still available in bookstores. It was out in May. And,
yeah.
My understanding from the publishers is that it's gone very well, and I'm very happy. So obviously the movie's next, and I think they're toying with Harrison Ford.
I had a joke there, but I'm not going to do that.
No,
I'm going to let that one go. The other book, though, This Indecision is Final, that's also available online, though, right?
I think it's online, yes.
Yeah, okay, good. We're talking about on being big but acting small, Chapter 5. One of the things that you said a minute ago, but without saying it specifically, was that almost everything that you can consume or whatever, however you want to say it, these days, especially in America, is a commodity. Almost everything that we have available to us is a commodity in that You have so many different opportunities to buy the same thing in so many different places, and so that if you're a huge corporation and you're selling one of these many commodities, you got to figure out a new wrinkle to deliver that commodity so that your brand comes out on top, or at least is competitive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think if you look at what gives you a cutting edge in the marketplace, it's your product spec or your service specification, and the actual thing you do, and the price, and then the relationship you establish with the buyer. My argument is, if in a world that's moving from success coming from what you do to how you do it, the actual specification of the product, it's unlikely you're going to have a sustainable competitive advantage for a long time.
That's right.
Because people can, they can copy your things. They can also copy your pricing. It's unlikely you'll have a sustainable price advantage for a long time in the market. What they can't copy is the intuition. We talked about Branson, the intuitive way you do business, how you do business, the way your people react to the people who buy your products and service. And I do believe that is becoming much, much more important in the way successful marketplace distinction is achieved.
Well, one of the things that I keep thinking, when we have a conversation like this, I think about this 25-year-old commercial about hush puppies.
Right.
And there were these little Japanese guys holding up a hush puppy. And they were saying, we can make it cheaper, but we can't make it dumber. If you remember when hush puppies were dumb, that was the little slogan they had, hush puppies are dumb. Yeah. You know, he said, we can make it cheaper, but we can't make it dumber. Well, the dumb was the uniqueness of that product.
Yeah.
It was the way they were delivering that product. It was the wrinkle that they had.
Yeah.
And that's what big businesses are trying to accomplish now.
There are very, very few businesses that can go out in the marketplace now with a kind of our product sucks less positioning and win. But also what we're finding is that cyberspace is changing almost everything we understood about distinction in the marketplace very, very quickly, far too quickly for many.
It's so quick.
You take something like golf balls, and this is a classic example. It's a classic branded model. Go in Sports Authority or any big shop, there's a whole wall of golf ball boxes, red boxes, blue boxes, black boxes, gold boxes. Each one will have a different price on it. Each one will have some words. It will say goals longer, higher, stronger, faster, whatever the golf balls do. There's your classic capitalist branding model. Now, through my mailbox on my birthday a few months ago came an egg carton. And on the front of the egg carton, it said, to Barry Gibbons from the ancestral home of golf, St. Andrews in Scotland.
Uh-huh.
And I opened it up, and there are six golf balls with my name on and the badge of St. Andrews. Nothing to do with the brand owner, the typists or the altar or these people. It's changing. What you've moved there, you've actually moved in one generation from mass marketing to virtually mass customization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you talked about earlier was how can small companies think big? The reverse of what we talked about, the Virgin. This is the golden age of the two-man, three-man, I'm using man as a generic, person operation. Actually getting in the marketplace and giving the impression that they're IBM. This is the golden age. The technology, the world, the cyberspace is enabling the one or two person operation to actually get out there and appear and be able to compete on the biggest terms.
We're able to give it the image or show an image of being bigger, but when they get to us, we're able to do some of the things that these large companies wish they could do, and that is to customize and to be special.
Media at the minute, I only see an IBM advert, where it's a group of Japanese businessmen talking about their vendor suppliers for valves, buried deep in Tokyo, and all very seriously, and they're not happy with their current valve supplier. And one of the guys around the boardroom table says, well, we've had a bid in from Mitch in Tokyo, and they all go, the IBM advert then cuts to Mitch in Tokyo, who sat in front of his PC screen in a pair of jeans, saying, arigato, and he's gone over there with an online bid to Tokyo.
Right.
And the message is very, very clear.
Yep.
And it's real. It's a real golden age is coming for the small business.
It really is, isn't it? It's, the 21st century, I believe, is going to be the century of the entrepreneur. No question about it. Barry, stand by. We've got to take a break, folks. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Barry Gibbons is our friend and our guest. He's the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. His picture's on the front, too, by the way, folks. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 44 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. James Pearson is on the board. He's my network producer, and he's the best. And if you'd like to call, he'll be the one to answer the phone, 888-822-8255, and he'll put you right through to me and my special guest and good friend, Barry Gibbons. He's the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. It's available online in bookstores, online also, as he says, only the best quality bookstores around the country. And Barry, I want to talk this segment. I want to go back into your 101 Universal Laws of Business. I picked out a handful of these that I'd like you to talk about.
Pick one out. Anyone.
Number four, if you wouldn't spend your own money on a business project, don't spend somebody else's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a chapter I call the test of rightness, and it's driven by my observation over the years that intelligent human beings in the community, in the family setting, you know, or the homes or the communities or schools, walk through the workplace door and abandon every piece of common sense that seems to govern them in normal life. Right, let me tell you a spending decision on Saturday for you or me or your listeners out there. I'm going out and I see something that I might be interested in buying, and the decision is I either spend that money or I leave it in the bank. Now, go into business, and the decision to spend money isn't like that. It isn't either spend it or leave it in the bank. The decision becomes I'm going to spend it on that, or that, or that, or that, because I can't not spend it because I'll lose the budget.
Right, because I have it.
Yeah, and I don't want to lose my budget because I had, you know, $600,000 last year, or $6,000, or $6 million, or $6 billion. And if I lose my budget, I don't put it up by 4%.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have I seen information technology systems upgraded because the upgrade was available, not because somebody's actually said, well, it's actually essential for this business that we spend this money on that. And the decision becomes not one to either spend it or leave it in the bank. It becomes what's the best way to spend it.
Well, and from a small business standpoint,
yeah.
I get people emailing me all the time wanting to find out about an investor, how to find an investor to invest in this business, and they're ready for the investor to come in right now, and they haven't even developed the business properly. I mean, they don't even have the business. Even the idea is not completely formulated, and they're already looking for an investor.
And the bad news is there are people out there who come in, and your own little philosophy there of eat what you kill gets abandoned very, very early in a lot of these companies, that they build up a burn rate which is just unsustainable,
right,
unless some guy comes in and feeds and feeds and feeds investment on the basis that it may well be the lottery win. I suspect, I am a fan of a continued bullish stock market. I don't see any reason why there's going to be a collapse, but I think some of these paper-thin businesses plans that have had huge money put behind them will come to
billions.
A sad end.
Billions and billions.
I think they may come to a sad end, and there may be some lesson learned, but, you know, you're moving from one almost world of business science to another world of business science, and there'll be big winners and big losers on the way. There always has been, always will be in this kind of transition.
Yep. Let's move on down and talk about number 10. And I've never heard anyone say this before, so I want you to explain why you say people are coin operated.
Oh, Jim, I get so frustrated when I look at people and the science of motivating people. You know, all of a sudden it becomes very important. Oh, but perhaps it would be good if our people were motivated and enthusiastic. What can we do? And then the chief executive comes in and says, well, let's have all these motivation ideas, but don't let them cost us any money.
Mm-hmm.
So we come up with these wonderful ideas like, let me think, I know, they can wear golf shirts on Friday. Look, everybody I know, essentially goes into work to fund their life. Don't kid yourself. That most people who work for somebody, now that's the employees for your small company, that's not the owner. They go in to fund the rest of their life, and just recognize that. If you want good people, pay good. If you want great people, pay great. If you want astonishing people, pay astonishing. People are essentially coin-operated, and then if you add to that the basic rule of don't do dumb things to demotivate them, I think you've probably got the most powerful motivation formula going. You don't fool yourselves, fellas, and don't patronize people.
All right. I like that. Talk to us about something you call enlightened capitalism.
Enlightened capitalism, to me, is moving away from the fact that the financial investor, the guy who writes the check as the stock investor, is the only person who is due any kind of return from the business. The reality is today a successful company relies on a network of stakeholders. They may be suppliers. They may be distributors, they may be franchisees, licensors, retailers. They are certainly the employees, and they may well include the community you work in or operate in. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that an enlightened capitalist today, while still being very aware of earnings per share, we'll try and balance the returns between all the stakeholders in the business if you want to be successful.
And I'll tell you what, that attitude is alive and well on the Internet.
Yes, it is.
And that's very exciting to me.
Yeah.
Stand by, Barry. It's 50 after. We're going to take a break, folks. We'll be right back with Barry Gibbons, the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. I recommend this book to you. Stay with us. Back, it's 54 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Jonathan Zuck is going to be joining us in the next hour. He is our technology expert, and he's the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies. Looking forward to having Jonathan back on with us. But right now, we're still visiting with our good friend Barry Gibbons, the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. Jonathan, I'm sorry. I've already got next hour on my mind. Barry, apologize for that.
That's
the sigmoid curve, number 22.
Yeah.
The sigmoid curve. What in the world is the sigmoid curve?
Sigmoid curve is an S-shaped graph, and it actually is supposed to govern almost everything in life, a relationship, you know, marriage, a career, a product life.
Who is Sigmoid?
And Sigmoid was, well, it was him. He invented it. If you want it beautifully described, in Charles Handy's book, The Empty Raincoat, essentially what it says is that anything in life will go up a gentle curve, and then slowly peak and decline. And the trick is to reinvent it, refire it, change it, alter it, get out of it just before it reaches the top of the peak arc.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to apply that to my career and left it to do something else. And you see it in products particularly. Mm-hmm. That they rise to a peak, and the trick is to just spot it just before the peak, and at that stage you need to reinvent. I mean, you have a classic now out there in the marketplace of Planet Hollywood, currently in credit protection, where I think you had, you know, a powerfully fresh offering a decade ago,
mm-hmm.
which has just been left to
languish,
stagnate, and, mm-hmm. and essentially it's a two-dimensional, it's a museum with okay food, and that clearly is going to have a life cycle now. Just before you hit the peak of the sigmoid curve, somebody should have reinvented that brand, regenerated it. Maybe it was a whole new bunch of stars to be associated with it, or a new offering, or what. I don't know what it is. But the opportunity was missed, and you can see with a company like that if you don't get it right, the decline is very, very quick. In England, we have Marks and Spencer's, one of the classic blue-chip retailers, which for 10 years has led its way on the stock market, and has been everybody's baby and darling. It almost hit a cliff in about 18 months because we ignored the sigmoid curve.
Well, one of the things, if you look at the backside of the sigmoid curve that you were describing, that there's a term for that backside of the sigmoid curve, and that's mature industry.
Yes, it is.
Would you agree? Because
yes, it is.
Because when someone tells you that they want you to buy a company, or you're considering buying a company or whatever, and if any time during the conversation that you hear the term mature industry, or you, maybe that's how you identify it, then you need, if you're going to continue to be interested in that
yes.
in that opportunity,
yes. Yes.
if there is one there,
yes.
You need to use the three terms. You need to see if you can apply the three terms yes. that Barry just gave you. Barry, give it to us again. You said either reinvent it.
Reinvent it, yes.
Or
get out of it. Or,
yeah.
Or, you know, you can't really beat this by doing different things. By doing things differently, you have to do different things.
Yeah.
That's significant.
And if the opportunity, what you think is an opportunity, is if it's in a mature industry, if you can't come up with a way to completely redefine that,
that's
to completely
right.
regenerate it, rejuvenate it, and reinvent it, as Barry says, then you probably need to leave it alone.
Yeah, oh, because it's, you know, when the very first day I went to business school, I spent a lot of time trying to unlearn stuff I got in business school.
Yeah,
the guy opened up and he said, a business is either declining or growing. There is no such thing as a static, water-treading, stable business.
Yep, it's either going up or down,
or declining.
Right?
Yeah, and very, it's very, very hard to look at a business and decide that.
We've got to wrap it up. That's got to be the last word. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to having you back already.
All right, Jim.
Thanks, Barry. Good job.
We'll say hi to all your listeners.
Thank you, sir. Barry Gibbons, the author of If You Want to Make God Really Laugh, Show Him Your Business Plan. I've got to wrap it up for this hour, folks. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. This is Jim Blassingham, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.